begin by sending out these baskets, and in these baskets are some stones. And I ask you to choose a stone, and as I'm speaking, to just hold the stone, and we'll do something with the stones later. Okay. Judith, could I ask you to send that around? And if you could just take a stone out of the basket here, and then we'll pass the basket along. Thank you. So this morning I'm speaking about, for some, an uncomfortable topic, sexual abuse or sexual harassment in our North American culture that has led to the rise of the Me Too movement that swept across the world last year and continues to move through individual relationships and through workplaces, necessitated by social media and need. The reality that many people are trapped in personal and work situations that are physically and psychologically threatening and disempowering is really the issue. And if we run out of stones there, maybe the extra stones here could be added, just so that people have choice. Thank you. The reality that many people are trapped in personal and work situations that are physically and psychologically threatening and disempowering is the real issue. It's an issue because so many people have had to endure sexual threats and harassments without the means to change the situation, and without knowing that so many others are experiencing the same thing. It's an issue because these experiences are so widespread. It's an issue that has been lifted up with enough energy that we are in the midst of what I hope to be a cultural shift. 1 in 4 North American women will be sexually assaulted during their lifetime, but 50% of women will experience sexual harassment in the workplace. And I suspect that the percentage is even higher if we include sexual harassment in everyday life. Catcalls, groping, flashing, being followed, walking down the street, lewd comments in bars, the street, restaurants, doctor's offices. I'm just going to take a wild guess that it's closer to 80%. Now, statistics never tell a whole story, yet they paint a picture that sexual assault and sexual harassment is part of life for women. It is the simple fact of everyday life. In the early days of the Me Too movement, I was aware of the stories in the media about Harvey Weinstein, the American movie producer. I was aware of the American president's comments about grabbing women's pussies. I was aware of the outrage growing from the blatant denials of the perpetrators. And then the focus shifted to Facebook. Now, whatever you might think about Facebook, it is a place where family and friends can hear about what's happening in our lives. And because I was a teacher for 30 years, I have a lot of Facebook friends. Well over 600. Many are students from those past 30 years. Young adult women from around the world navigating the film and television job market. And of course, my own daughters and their friends. And my colleagues in the Unitarian world. So not the rich and famous, just regular people. Regular women, regular lives. What I noticed in those early days was the wave that moved across my Facebook world of the women that were saying, me too. And if this is new to you, let me just say that what they were saying me too about was that they too had experienced sexual abuse or sexual harassment or sexual assault. It was an astounding, astonishing wave. Day after day, this wave itself became the story. On October 15th, 2017, triggered by the public sexual assault accusations against the film producer Harvey Weinstein, it began as a tweet by the actress Alyssa Milano. She sent it out before she went to bed one night. And when she woke up in the morning, there were 100,000 responses. Me too. And she burst into tears. What you may not know about the Me Too movement is that it actually started 20 years earlier. Taruna Burke began the Me Too movement in 1996 while she was working at a leadership camp in Selma, Alabama. I'm sorry. I'm very emotional this morning. Could be that I didn't sleep much last night. But the subject matter gets to me too. There, Taruna Burke met a young girl who disclosed to her that she was being sexually abused at the hands of her mother's boyfriend. Burke, who was only 22 herself at the time, felt immediately connected to this young girl and overwhelmed with emotion and sent her away without saying very much at all. But recently, in a lecture at Rutgers University, Burke said, "Really, all I wanted to say to her was, baby, me too. This is something that I know and I get," she said. "I hear you and I believe you. But at the time, I didn't have the wherewithal to say that." A decade later, Burke founded the nonprofit organization Just Me Incorporated to support women, particularly women and girls of color, who have experienced sexual violence. She said her work focused on strengthening their sense of worth so that they would believe that they were valuable just for existing, despite the societal pressures telling them that they were not. When the Me Too movement wave rolled across the world last October, Burke feared that her work would be overshadowed, something that she had seen happen to Black women's efforts many times before. She said she followed the hashtag obsessively for hours until she was struck by a woman who had not only tweeted the words Me Too, but also shared a deeply personal story of sexual violence. She then realized that her work would not be left in the dust and that it didn't matter who got the credit. She says, "The work of hashtag MeToo is about healing. It's about healing as individuals and healing as communities. And it's about interrupting sexual violence whenever and wherever it comes up in our lives." Based on my experience as a girl and young woman growing up in this society, Based on my experience as a girl and young woman growing up in the society, I knew when I became a mother of daughters, and I have two, I knew that they would need to be prepared to defend themselves at some point, or at least have the confidence to defend themselves. So I signed them up for self-defense classes, which were tons of fun. I signed them up for the Unitarian Sexual Education Program that we call Our Whole Lives. I tried to arm them with knowledge and skills that they would need to protect themselves as women in our society. Because I knew that being a girl or a woman put you in a position of vulnerability, on the street, in the workplace, and in relationships. I'm not going to describe a great long list of sexual harassments or assaults in my life, because really it's about not the individual things, but the accumulation every day of the small transgressions, the words, the comments, the looks, the inappropriateness of some of them. Something is more likely to happen to a young girl than not, is my opinion, and they need to be prepared. So it wasn't surprising that the stories of Me Too flowed across the screen. And as my daughter Casey told me, it was a relief to see and hear our female community publicly saying Me Too. The relief came because every time another woman said Me Too, the silence and the isolation got smaller, the norm of it. The norm of that silence and that isolation got smaller, and the community of shared experience grew. Why do we not speak about it? Why do we keep quiet? Why is there so much silence? I don't have all the answers, and I invite you to share your wisdom later. But let me try a few. Because we dismiss or minimize the events. Because it's just what happens. It's the way it is. It's normal. It just happens to everyone. You just have to deal with it. Because for some it's shameful. Because some women take it on as their responsibility. I wore the wrong thing, I was in the wrong place, I should have said something, I should have walked away, I should have known better, I should have not had that other drink, I shouldn't have been in the room alone. Some women don't speak up because they're afraid. They fear that perhaps their family might be threatened or they might be harmed. Some women fear losing a job and so not being able to pay the rent, food, medication, especially if they are single or single mothers. And finally, that defeated response, that voice in the head below conscious thought, what's the point? No one's going to believe me. No one cares. Nothing good will come of me saying anything. What's the point? Nothing will be done. So Me Too with you. And as the Me Too stories moved across the screen, I was confronted with my personal coping strategy, which was to say, hey, I'm a strong woman. I don't need all this sharing. I'm a realistic woman. This stuff is just everyday part of my life. And we just need to deal with it individually, by ourselves. Me, I'm strong. And then three things came out of that reaction in my analysis. One was that I was a product of my generation and culture and family training. I was a third generation feminist. My grandmother was a suffragette. I was raised to be strong. Strong women don't have an excuse. You deal with it. You get on with it, and then you move on. Two, as the tsunami wave rolled across the globe, it became evident that this cultural norm that I was defending didn't need to be so. It did not need to be normalized. I did not need to normalize it any longer. We did not need to normalize it any longer. And thirdly, I saw how I, as a woman of privilege, because I was educated, white, relatively wealthy, living in one of the most enlightened countries in the world, I was privileged because I was not trapped in a job I couldn't walk away from. I was not in a community or ethnic group that had few resources. I had not heard that I was worthless, powerless, and all of those for every day of my life. I had the privilege of believing that the system I operated in could be changed by me. Watching the Me Too tsunami, I heard how many women could not speak up. Still, 2018, 2017, it wasn't like 1950 anymore. Still, they could not speak up because of social, ethnic, and economic realities. There are many reasons to stay quiet. And even strong, privileged women like myself keep quiet. And we all have our reasons. But here was the tsunami moving across the world. And maybe, if we all spoke up, we might change the culture. But to make that cultural change, we need everybody. Men and women, we need everyone to speak up, to commit to not staying silent when they see sexual harassment or abuse. It is that cultural silence that we must address, and we need to do it together. As mothers and fathers, grandmothers and grandfathers, we do not want our children to be unsafe. We want our children and our children's children to be safe to express their beautiful sexuality. We want them to be safe in their jobs and in their social situations. We want them to be safe walking down the street any time of day. We want them to be safe to have passionate and honest relationships. To create this culture where women and girls can be safe, to be whole, beautiful themselves, each one of us needs to commit to making this world safe by speaking up when we experience or when we see harassment and abuse. We need not to be quiet any longer. So I'm asking you today to consider committing to end the silence. When you or someone you know is threatened or harassed or abused, speak up. It's about justice, equity, and compassion in all our human relations, our second principle. As we listen to Eden sing Milk's anthem, Quiet, and as you hold this stone, I'd ask you to think about the times where you needed to stay quiet, where you stayed quiet, for whatever reason that was. Maybe think of the words that at the time you couldn't speak. Hold that stone of silence. And when the song is over, I will then invite you to let those stones of silence go in a ritual of commitment to speaking out, of speaking up, of not being quiet any longer, for yourself, for your family, for your work colleagues, for your neighbors, for yourself. Eden.